Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 70 of the Panelcast. This is a very special episode because it marks the first time we were on our new website. Woo! So, my name is AJ.
And this is Brian, and of course we're going to be bringing you some news stories. AJ's got a bunch of stuff to review, and I managed to squeeze a few things in there myself. We also got some information about some upcoming comic shows, so stay tuned.
Hey, how's it going? This is Derek from Pulp Fiction and Long Beach, the world's biggest selection of graphic novels and comic books. Check out our website at www.cheapgraphicnovels.com, and you get all your graphic novels at 40% off cover price. How much?
45% off.
Even better than 40%. And we can ship it to you anywhere in the United States. Again, check out www.cheapgraphicnovels.com. Or if you're in Long Beach, California, check us out at Pulp Fiction.
1742 Clark Avenue, Long Beach, California.
We got manga, we got anime, we got back issue comics, current comics. We'll put you on the pull list, give you a good discount. Graphic novels, figures, toys, the whole shebang. Check us out, because we rock. Pulp Fiction and CheapGraphicNovels.com. Booyah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. All right, we're going to go ahead and jump in with some news stories here. So, AJ, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Okay, well, first off, some tragic news in the movie industry in that the, Dino De Laurentiis passed away.
He's a pretty huge name in terms of movies.
Pretty huge name. He did a lot of, he was an Italian film producer and entrepreneur, and, I don't know. It's sad to see him go. There's no mention of how he passed away anywhere, but he was 91, so I'm guessing it's part of the old age thing. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the name, which is pretty sad, you will be familiar with the movies that he's done. Most prominent that comes to mind is Serpico, Death Wish, The Dead Zone, the King Kong remake, Flash Gordon, both the Conan movies, Manhunter, Dune, Army of Darkness. What else did he do? Hannibal, The Red Dragon, Hannibal Rising, Maximum Overdrive, Cat's Eye. He's done a lot of cool movies, a lot of cult movies, right, that us as geeks have grown up to love and appreciate during the time. Spent a lot of time doing those Hannibal movies, though. So, yeah, it's sad to see that he has passed away, and he'll be somewhat missed. I loved Conan, and Conan was one of my favorite movies growing up, as well as Dune. I mean, we all loved Dune.
Yeah, I mean, it's, in terms of, comparison to the book, there's something to be said for it. But as a movie on its own, it's a pretty classic movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, it had a serious impact on all of us when we were growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't throw a stone in a Comic-Con without hitting somebody that loves all the books and has read all the books due to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Before that movie came out, Frank Herbert, it wasn't
that. I definitely, was inspired to read the novels because I saw that movie.
Right. So, it's sad to see him go, and our condolences to his family and friends. Brian?
What have we got here? In the latest string of superhero deaths, apparently there's been some speculation that Marvel is about to try to kill off Spider-Man in the newest story arc for the Amazing Spider-Man. I don't even really know what to say about this. I'm getting to that point where the whole killing off of superheroes is pointless.
Yeah, it's fairly retarded right now because there's no point in killing them off when they don't stay dead.
Yeah, they kill them and then they come back, and there's usually some absolutely ridiculous explanation for it. And because I don't really understand it. It seems like they're just trying to, cash in on something. But I think by now people would be kind of tired of this gimmick, especially when you know they're not going to give up one of their cash cows.
Yeah. You know, honestly, like, personally, I would love to see one of the major characters pass away and stay dead. This past year, one major character did pass away in the Marvel Universe, and that's Cable. And I haven't seen his return yet, but I'm fully expecting to. But I would really, you know, after all the drama that Spider-Man has been through in his life with comics and everything, it'd be nice to see him finally, like, retire, you know what I mean, or just say goodbye. Unfortunately, because of the comic books that are out, like Spider-Girl, we know he'll be back, because otherwise, you know, that won't exist unless they're going to do the whole different universe thing, and that's fine. They're going to do whatever they got to do. But so far, the only major superhero or character that I've ever seen die and stay dead is right now is Sabretooth. He's been dead for 2 years now, and he hasn't come back. So, and when they killed Colossus off, I thought, you know, he would stay dead, and he stayed dead for a good 5 years, but then they brought him back eventually, so it's redundant. You know, maybe they're just going to give him a timeout. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Are there any anything saying when or how he's going to die? Or?
Well, the story arc, I guess, is supposed to start with issue number 654. Which will be coming out in February. So, but right now it's just speculation. They haven't really been able to get any firm details on it from the stories that I've seen. It's just the storyline that they've got so far seems to be leading up to that. And it wouldn't surprise me.
654, you said? Yeah, because they're barely on 647 now. Or 648. Well, I'll be curious to see how it happens.
Well, I guess there was a preview of something that was seen that had the caption, "The Death of Spider-Man," written on it. So,
you know, he's been threatened to die for so long, it really unattractive to me anymore.
Well, the whole killing off of the superhero thing just doesn't appeal to me. I think after they did it with Superman, you know, it just, all right.
Right.
Do something else.
Right. And it's happened. We've seen it a lot recently with Captain America and Batman.
Right, right.
You know, those people stay dead. Some of them stay dead for like 3 months.
Yeah, but they always come back. So I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I don't. On the Spider-Man news, while we're there, Zooey Deschanel is being sought for the role of Betty Brant in the upcoming Spider-Man reboot. From Sony Pictures. Dark Horizons reports that director Mark Webb worked with Deschanel on 500 Days of Summer and has big plans for the character, the sexy personal assistant of Daily Bugle boss J. Jonah Jameson, whom Elizabeth Banks portrayed in the three previous Spider-Man films. An insider says Mark Webb has big plans for her. He wants a strong performer to carry the role, and Zooey Deschanel fits the bill perfectly. The role is hers if she wants it. I loved Zooey Deschanel. I think she's an amazing actress, and she's pretty hot to boot. So it'd be kind of cool to see her in the film. But, you know, who knows? This whole new reboot of the Spider-Man franchise, again, for me, I think I've said it before, but it just feels too soon, you know? But I think they're trying to bank a whole new re-release of, like, you know, the Avengers, Captain America, and the whole nine. They want to get Spider-Man on board with the same thing that's going on. That way they can include him in maybe the Avengers films or some other side films or what have you. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't know.
I guess if it's a move to try to incorporate all of the Marvel films together into sort of one kind of like cohesive whole, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. If they're just rebooting it just to just do another storyline or something, then I guess that's probably a different matter. That does seem kind of pointless.
Yeah. But I think, you know, like we were saying, I think they're just trying to bring them in with the whole Avengers storyline that's going on. Because you're going to see Nick Fury show up, Samuel Jackson show up in it. Sally Field and Uncle Ben and Martin Sheen have been cast as Aunt May and Uncle Ben, which them in themselves are pretty big names.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'll see it because I'm a geek, but who knows? Until a trailer comes out, I'm not holding my breath.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
And looks like DC Comics is finally got around to releasing their iPad comic book online store. I was actually noticing there was a lot of Twitter posts about it as well. And there was one that I kind of agreed with because I follow Red 5 Comics on Twitter. And they had made a comment saying that it's cool that DC Comics has made the jump to doing digital comics, but at the same time, they don't know how they feel about it because they've got their own app and Marvel has their own app, and it's saying that, you know, it kind of hurts the indie publishers because each of the titans has like their own store that they do, and you know, it would be a lot nicer if there was just one you know, sort of universal comic book app that anybody could jump onto.
Right, kind of like a comic book store in itself where you can get
you know,
issues from different publishers, and why can't there be one app where you can do the same thing? And technically there is in the C Display Reader, but as far as being, you know, iPad...
But C Display is only for actually reading the comics. It's not for purchasing them. Sure. And I think that's the comment that he was making, is that this app for the iPad, you can only purchase DC Comics with it. It's exclusively DC. Like, right. Marvel's online store is exclusively Marvel. So indie publishers that maybe don't have the money to put into developing software for distributing their comics are kind of asked out.
Well, see, in that aspect, then we really need to contact these comic book stores and have them develop their own app so maybe they can purchase digital titles from indie publishers as well as the major titles from your favorite comic book store online.
Right.
You know, as another way to boost the economy for comic book stores themselves, because they're getting raped due to this stuff. They're losing business left and right because of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, my prediction for it is that eventually DC and Marvel are going to end up moving towards some sort of a universal format, because ultimately that's what the market wants. You know, it was the same thing that happened when the Kindle came out, you know, and they could use whatever format they wanted because they were really the only ones selling at the time. And then other ebooks started selling, and then, you know, they started getting a lot of competition for like the Nook and stuff. And eventually with the newer Kindles that are coming out, they've had to change them so that they can use other formats rather than just the Kindle format, because that's what people want. People want to be able to use their device to look at, you know, multiple formats, or they want to be able to purchase something and use it on any device that they happen to have.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's what's going to happen, is they'll hold on to it. They'll be exclusive for a while, and eventually DC and Marvel will make the move. They'll probably do it slowly because, you know, they have enough money to hold out, but eventually they will.
I don't know, man. I don't know. You can never get DC and Marvel to agree on shit.
I don't necessarily mean to work together to do it. I just mean that both parties will eventually, you know, have the option to purchase their comics in other comic formats, so that, you know, I'm sure what's going to happen is that there's going to be other people that develop online comic stores that are going to use a more universal format.
Well, yeah, you can go to like Drive-Thru Comics and stuff like that to purchase, you know, indie publishers and stuff, for iPads. But
I mean, eventually somebody's going to make a universal one to try to collect all the different publishers' works together, you know, to make it more like an actual comic book store with a selection of everything rather than just specific, you know, niches like just DC titles or just, you know, indie titles or something. So eventually, you know, the market's going to want it, and that's what people are going to do.
Right. Well, on an unrelated note, our favorite new TV show, The Walking Dead, has been renewed for a second season. First off, before
and I that get... was just off of the first episode, wasn't it?
Right. Before I get too deep, I made a mistake in last week's news reporting. I said that 53 million people had watched the show, and I was wrong. The decimal point had moved on me. I wasn't looking. It was 5.3 million people, with 3.6 million viewers in the key demographic. The second episode saw only a small drop with 4.7 million viewers and 3.3 million viewers in the key demographic. So my apologies on that, making you think it was 53 million people. That's pretty much half the population, but still. AMC has officially announced a 13-episode second season renewal for the recently launched post-zombie apocalypse series, The Walking Dead. We actually will be talking about episode 2 of The Walking Dead later on in the show. But I'm very excited to see that it has grown from its original 6-episode launch of the first season to a 13-episode second season. It's just a lot more stuff is going to go on. And it kind of, honestly, you know, it upsets me a little bit. Because 6 episodes of the first season, while it may be great, bothers me because I feel cheated out of the additional 7 episodes that we're going to get for the second season. You know, I wish that 13 episodes would be for the first season as well. You know what I mean? Like, they should have...
Well, I think they did it that way because they weren't certain, you know. That happens a lot of times with the new series coming out. The first season will not always have a full complement of episodes because, you know, they're trying to be cautious.
Yeah, but normally that happens on mid-season shows. Like, shows that come up in the mid-season because other series have gotten canceled in the meantime. This was a planned first season, and it launched in the fall when all the other TV shows started. So it would have been nice to see them pick up maybe an additional 9, which is what traditional TV shows do. They start out with a plan for going, like, 10 episodes or so, and then if it does well, then they get picked up for the additional 10 to 12 episodes to finish out the season. So,
or maybe it's just the way that it worked out is the way that they were planning the story arcs that they finished one out in the 6 and just decided to go ahead and start it up the next season.
I mean, either way you look at it, I mean, it's good news in that it's getting, you know, twice as many episodes for the second season. That means we'll see more Walking Dead or what have you. And I'm very excited for that. But at the same time, I, as a fan, feel cheated because I would have liked to see in 13 episodes this season. Because that just means I have to wait a year till I get more Walking Dead and Friends. You know what I mean? So six episodes, as great as the show is, 6 episodes is going to make it very hard to satisfy me for that year. That's me watching 6 episodes 1,000 times throughout that year waiting for season 2 when I could have had more, you know? I'm just a greedy fuck. I can't help it. But
well, you got the comics too, so.
Yeah, I do have the comics that are putting out that I'm, you know, satiating me in the meantime.
And then if the novels come out soon, you can read the novels until the season starts up.
Yeah, I know, but I'd rather watch it, man. It's an awesome show. That's all I'm saying. I want another zombie TV show. In the meantime, I'll just watch Dead Set and get over it. So, Brian, what do you got?
Well, apparently, New Line still has no idea what the hell they're going to do with Why the Last Man.
Shia. It's all your fault.
Well, everything's his fault, really, but yeah, the last time this story was, you know, getting talked about was they were in talks with having DJ Caruso doing the directing, and he wanted to have Shia LaBeouf starring, which was something that I was not happy about at all, and that seemed to have fallen through. Right now, it looks like Louis Leterrier is looking to try to get in to direct it. People don't know who he is. He's also done things like The Incredible Hulk and Clash of the Titans, which they're, you know, those are all right movies. So
yeah, but they're very, very, very special effects driven. And Why the Last Man is not a special effects movie. Maybe as a background, you know what? If they got the Hughes brothers, who recently did The Book of Eli.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome because, I mean, his backgrounds were gorgeous and sort of set in the same, you know, time period, which is going to be
a post-apocalyptic type of event.
Right, but not a lot of special effects. So maybe if they did something like that. But, you know, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's who's talking about it right now. I don't know. I haven't been able to find any information about whether or not New Line has actually discussed anything with him, but Louis Leterrier himself has said that he wants to direct the films, and he's also saying that, you know, he's not really sure whether he would do it as a TV series or as a series of films, but one way or another, he wants to work on it.
I personally think it should be a TV series. I mean, the only reason he's thinking about a big-budget serialized TV series is due to The Walking Dead and seeing the success of it.
Well, so, if The Walking Dead works, I think that Y could work as a TV series as well, especially because there's so much that happens.
Right. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different story arcs in there that could be contained per season, you know, mm-hmm. much like The Walking Dead. And so I think it'd be great to see it as a TV show.
My only concern with Y being made into a TV show is that Y has already ended. The series is done with, and, you know, so I would be concerned that at some point, like, they would get to the end of the comic series and then renew it and keep going with some other storyline that just kind of, you know, goes off into some weird nonsense or, you know, just...
Right, you're afraid it would ruin it.
Yeah, like, they would start expanding on the story or, you know, they try to take it in a new direction, something that doesn't really jibe well with the actual comic itself. Like, I think if they did a trilogy of movies, they could encompass most of the storyline for Y.
Yeah, but think of the movies, though. I mean, you're basically talking about Lord of the Rings at this point. It's just a movie with him walking, you know? And I think it would be better covered in a TV show. I mean, you'd have an ever-changing cast of nothing but women, first off, so we could see a bunch of hot chicks. But I don't know. You'd have three movies of basically him walking. And yeah, there's a lot of different things that happen, but there's so many different story arcs and so many different adventures that he would partake that I think would be more powerful as a TV show. I mean, just the stuff with his sister alone and his mother, you know, those things in themselves would take a lot of build-up to get to see the events that happen, which I think would only be able to cover in a TV show, personally.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. That's one of the advantages of doing something as a TV series is you can get more in-depth with the story.
Right, plus if you do a TV series, Brandy would be able to walk around with her 355 was Rob shirt for like 6 or 7 years and be proud
right?
to do so. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. That's just me personally. But.
Well, I'm not against them doing it as a TV series. That's a concern of mine if it does become a TV series that right. they would just keep running with a story after the story is ended. If you catch what I'm saying.
No, I totally agree. I don't want to see, like, you know, Son of Y or anything like that, or, you know, or them trying to fill in that gap, that big, what was it, 20 or 30 year gap between the end of the story arc and the end of the comic book. I wouldn't want to see that either, because that's a lot of story that they could write in there. But at the same time, if they did it like they're doing The Walking Dead, 10 episodes a season or something like that, you know, then I think they would cover themselves. Plus, you know, us fans at Con would not let them ruin it. We would be all over their asses like crazy, just like we were this year at the Walking Dead panel, you know?
Well, ultimately, I think it's completely pointless speculation at this point, since New Line doesn't even know what the hell they want to do with it, so...
Right. And again, I still blame Shia. I mean, as much as I hate him as an actor, if it would have hurried up the production and gotten us to see something, then I would have been okay with him being in the movie. I mean, He's. I don't like him personally, but who knows? He could have fit the role.
I think I'd rather wait.
I think you're stupid.
Yeah, I probably am.
Anyway.
So what have you got?
I have got us going to a break. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll come back with more news stories.
This is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com.
And welcome back to Panelcast. We're going to continue on with our news stories. So, Brian, why don't you take it away for us?
Okay. Well, it looks like the Sony film Green Hornet is finally going to be getting its release date. Sony went ahead and announced it for January 14th of next year. There was some speculation as to whether or not they were actually going to be able to release it or what they were going to do with the film, since it got a pretty terrible reception at the Comic-Con International, I guess, debut that they had for it. A lot of the fanboys really did not like it at all. And so there was a lot of talk as to whether or not they were even going to bother to release the film. But it looks like they went ahead and just did like another, like a more traditional test screening with just like, you know, random selection of people to come in and see it. And their ratings got an average of about 93. And, you know, so it seems like the general population likes it. So they're going to go ahead and release it.
So let me get this right. They're ignoring the fanboys
mm-hmm.
and going with the general pop.
Right.
That's retarded.
Well, maybe not, because, I mean, honestly, when you look at it, fanboys account for a pretty small selection of people. I mean, if this is a movie that, even if people don't know who the Green Hornet is, myself being one of them, if it's still an enjoyable movie and people are going to see it, I mean, if it appeals to a wide audience of people, not just to the fanboys, then, you know, they stand a really good chance of making their money back.
True, so but you'd think that they wanted to appeal to both.
You would think so, but maybe it's going to be one of those things where, you know, the fanboys will come around and decide that they really like it. You know, kind of a thing where when, like we've talked about so many times before, when Heath Ledger was announced as Joker and all the fanboys were in a rage until they actually saw the pictures and then saw his performance.
True.
So it could just be a thing of, you know, they just announced it too soon, and, you know, it seems to me that people, especially at Comic-Con, they're expecting to get the moon every time. And so, like, people are really critical of anything that comes out during Comic-Con. Like, it seems like that's the place where things really get kind of ripped to shreds.
Yeah, but you know what? You can't blame them, though. I mean, if you have the audacity to show a movie at Comic-Con, then you have to expect that it's either going to be going really well or getting torn to shit. You know,
right.
That's the chance you take at Comic-Con. You're talking about 150,000 die-hard comic book fans, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, it's different if they would have shown it at, say, WonderCon, where it's nothing but actual comic book fans as opposed to media whores as well, and gotten a good or bad reaction, or judge the reaction at that point, you know. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. You're right on that aspect. It could be, you know, the geeks are looking too hard for something, but they'll make their money back with a Gen Pop. But as a comic book creator myself, I would want a film based on my work to appeal not just to geeks, but to everybody else. I'd want a decent number of both sides enjoying the movie.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm just saying that maybe it was just the wrong crowd of geeks.
It could have been
the Comic-Con debut. You know, it could be that there are other Green Hornet fans out there that are going to really enjoy this film.
And who's the actor? I can't remember his name right now.
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. It could be his fault as well, because a lot of comic book geeks aren't a big fan of Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
You know,
it could be that too. But, and, you know, personally, based off of the other films of his I've seen, he's kind of like one of those one character actors.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about Green Hornet to really say whether Seth Rogen is a good or bad choice for that. So
we shall see.
I'm going to wait. I'm pretty much going to be, you know, one of the general population type people watching this when that movie comes out. Cause I don't know enough about it.
Well, alrighty then. Moving on, as far as films are concerned, we have a couple of remakes that I wanted to pass on the news for. The first being that, in case you don't know or haven't heard, Zac Efron is in contention for the lead of the role of Kaneda for the Akira live-action version.
Who's Zac Efron? That name sounds familiar.
Fucking High School Musical.
Oh, I haven't actually seen those movies, but
who
I've
had?
Heard that name so many times, and I can't place it with the face.
Yeah, he's a brown-haired Justin Bieber, and I'll just leave it at that.
Ugh.
Right. I'm not excited about him taking on the role of Kaneda. I am excited about Morgan Freeman is reportedly circling the role of the Colonel. So that's kind of cool. But the other good news is that the Hughes brothers, which we had mentioned earlier, is in. They're going to be the ones behind the Akira live action remake. So I think if they do it right, it's going to be one of the best fucking movies we've ever seen. Akira being a staple of
manga. It's going
to
be really hard to do. I mean, are they trying to do a remake of the anime, or are they planning on taking like more of the story from the manga and going with that? Because
they're going off the anime.
Okay.
They're going out because the actual animated film.
There's a lot of story that doesn't get covered in that film.
Right.
That, you know, because it was made with the assumption that people were already familiar with it, so I'm not sure how well that will do, because really, I mean, Akira is a hugely popular film.
It's the
for
film.
An anime.
It's the anime. Like when you think of anime, that's the first name that everybody pops in their head, because that's the one. You know, it's the
right.
staple of anime that.
But even still, it's popular for anime.
Right.
You know, so I mean, it's still not something that most of the general population. If you say Akira, they're gonna look at you and say, "I don't know what that is."
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, like, I'm kind of fearing that it's gonna end up being something like Speed Racer, where it just
Gets slapsticky and stupid.
Well, Speed Racer was already kind of slapsticky and stupid itself.
Right.
But it just, the way that the film was made, like, it just didn't have any of the feel of the original series. Like, it seemed entirely too American, I think. And I guess maybe, I don't know, that's what some people liked about it. But I'm afraid that everything that makes Akira what it is going to get lost in translation into a live action film.
I totally agree. Completely agree. But like I said, if they do it right, it's going to be a phenomenal movie.
Right.
I'm just afraid it's going to look like, if they're going to do it wrong, it's going to look like that shitty live action version of Fist of the North Star. Like, oh my God, that thing was horrible. Costas Mandalore, you know? And Rufio. Rufio was in the goddamn fucking movie. Anyway, I'm buying off.
Yeah, well, we'll bide our time and see how it comes out.
Right. And in on the same report, in other remake news, Pajiba is reporting that I Am Legend scribe Mark Protasevich is apparently close to finishing a script for the Old Boy remake. Yeah. I loved Old Boy. Old Boy was a phenomenal movie. I haven't watched the other sequels, Lady Vengeance, and I can't remember what the third one is, but Old Boy in itself was an amazing film. And I believe I talked about it in a previous panel cast, where it's one of those movies that my mom loves, and it's in Korean, so she was able to translate everything for me, you know. So,
right.
But it was just that one scene when he finally gets loose and beats the crap out of everybody. It's so realistic and so wonderful that I'm praying they don't screw up the remake. The American remake. Having not seen Let Me In, which is the remake of Let the Right One In, I can't tell you, you know, whether I have high hopes for it or not. But we'll see. The thing about Old Boy that makes Old Boy what it was is because it was a Korean film. It was because it was very Asian and the subculture and stuff that goes on there. So you're able to agree and understand what's going on. To do it into an American version, I think, would be sloppy at this point. But I'll hold my, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, maybe they can do something with it, something along the lines of the American remake that they did for Seven Samurai, which is, I can never remember the name of the movie, and I have it, and I've watched it several times.
Magnificent Seven?
Magnificent Seven. Can't remember that title to save my life. But, you know, where The Magnificent Seven was a good film because they, you know, they did it in such a way that made sense with having it in an American background instead of in, you know, feudal Japanese background.
As cowboys?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the ultimate westernization of that film. They not only brought it over American style, but then they made it a western, like totally,
right.
Completely westernized that fucking movie, that series.
Right, like they took it and made it its own thing. So, I mean, it strayed a lot from the original film, but it still ended up being a good film in its own right because they made the right changes to it. They didn't just take the story and just, you know, like change all the names to American names and then just go with it, you know, which seems to happen sometimes with remakes where they just kind of take the exact same story and retell it, but with different people, and it doesn't work. Like, they don't make enough changes to make an American setting work.
Right. Well, I mean,
and I think that was.
But then again, they remade it into Battle Beyond the Stars, which is completely horrible.
Well, case in point. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, it can work when they translate films from, you know, a foreign film into an American film. It can work.
Yeah. Speaking of which, though, you know, they are remaking The Seven Samurai. And guess who's
are they, like?
Guess who's starring in it?
Ken Watanabe? No.
George Clooney.
Who? What the fuck? And it's actual a Seven Samurai remake and not a Magnificent Seven remake?
No, it's a Seven Samurai remake, but it's going to be set in present day involving paramilitary mercenaries defending a village in northern Thailand.
Are they going to call it Seven
Yes.
Samurai? See, that's... Oh, okay.
I made Brian's day.
That's what I was talking about. Like, what they did with Magnificent Seven is they took the core story and changed it enough to make sense. And they didn't just say, oh, we're just going to, yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop because I'm just going to keep going and going. I don't. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the other story that I've got here. Because
going back to Old Boy real quick. They're already planning on sending out a draft of the screenplay to filmmakers like Steven Spielberg, Matthew Vaughn, and Danny Boyle. So if they send it to Danny Boyle, I think Old Boy's going to be the shit. Because Danny Boyle knows how to make a violent movie. As far as, like, you know...
Yeah, he has an interesting...
Not an action movie, but a violent movie where, like, people are fighting violently. And I think Old Boy would be great for him. As far as Spielberg and Vaughn concerned, I'm not too excited about it. But anyway, continue on with what you have, Brian.
Oh, I was just going to come out and talk about, say that Silent Hill, the Silent Hill sequel has been officially announced. This was some information pulled off of Michael J. Bassett's blog, who's going to be directing the film. And I'm pretty excited about it. I guess I'm going to have to expect it to be different from the first movie because it's not going to be the same director. So, you know, you're going to end up getting somebody else's twist on it. But I really love the Silent Hill series as a whole, and I love the first movie. So I'm really, really hoping that this is going to be something good.
As am I. I love, like, I'm reading the blog where he got this new story from, and I love what he says in that last paragraph, where he says, I'm determined to deliver a film that builds on the qualities of the first film and draw on the best aspects of the games, whilst giving the audience more nuanced characters, a compelling story, and introducing some terrifying new monsters, as well as bringing back a few favorites, and, most important of all, just scaring the shit out of everyone.
Right. So, I mean, it definitely seems like he's got a passion for the games, which is why I think the first film worked so well, because Christoph Gans was such a huge fan of the games. I mean, he made his own fan film and sent it to Konami to ask for permission to make the movie. So, as long as he can capture that aspect, I think as long as he can bring his own passion to the movie, that's really what's going to make it work. Because it doesn't have to be the stories that I've already seen from the games, just like the first one wasn't. I'm not expecting that. I'm just expecting it to be Silent Hill.
Well, he wrote it. He wrote the screenplay for the second one, for this one.
Michael J. Bassett did? Okay, well, that's usually a good sign. Like, if the person is writing and directing, like, they usually have a pretty good idea of what it is that they want to do with the movie. So I'm hoping that that's going to come through and translate.
As long as they don't Resident Evil it, then it'll be a great movie. I mean, only other way, either they ruin it by doing the Resident Evil to it, or give...
As long as they don't let Michael W.S. Anderson touch the movies, I think they should be fine.
God, what's the other one I was going to name that you hate? What's his name?
Oh, let us not... he who shall
not be named. No, we need to name him. Because it's going to drive me crazy. The guy that did the Blood Rain movies.
I don't want to say his name.
I'm going to look it up, because I'm going to say his name. You Bull. That's it. As long as he doesn't touch the film.
Yeah. I do not understand how that guy keeps making movies, because whereas somebody like, you know, his name is escaping me, Transformers director Michael Bay, I can understand why they let him keep making movies, because he makes movies that appeal to pretty much anybody. They have explosions and really nice special effects. The stories are shit, and I hate his movies, but some people just want to go to be entertained for 2 hours and leave.
Same with me. I'm the same way. I don't really like the Transformers movies, but when I want to go see big robots beating the shit out of each other, Michael Bay's the man that's going to deliver.
Right. But Uwe Boll...
Uwe Boll has a habit of taking really great actors, case in point, Ben Kingsley, and making them look horrible. Yeah.
The films themselves are just so bad. Even the people like you said, like Ben Kingsley,
Gandhi. You made Gandhi look like shit.
When their dialogue is in these films, I've watched a couple of his movies as much as I could stand to, and it's just everything about it. The dialogue is awful. The action is awful. The special effects, everything is just awful. It looks like... I've seen fan films on YouTube that are better. And I don't understand why people keep giving him the money to direct films. Nobody goes and sees them. They all do terribly at the box office, and he keeps getting it. It's like almost like he's a sideshow, and they're just giving him money just to see what kind of fucked up thing he can do next.
Yeah, he's a douchebag. Anyway, moving on.
Yes,
I've got a couple of little tidbits from our upcoming films that we're kind of excited to see. Green Lantern, a comic book movie, has posted a rumored description of the teaser trailer set to debut next week in front of Harry Potter. I don't care what you say, Brian. I'm going to go see Harry Potter, and I'm sure I'm going to love it. So shut up.
I don't have a problem with the Harry Potter films. I mean, I'm not a huge fan, and I've read most of the books. I still haven't read the last one yet.
I take you to see a Harry Potter movie?
Yeah, it was the last one. But that one I just had a problem with.
It was a teen drama?
I hadn't. No, I hadn't. I think I had actually missed one of the movies. I missed the movie that came before it. So there was stuff that was happening that I couldn't follow because I hadn't read all the books up to that point, and I hadn't seen one of the movies. So I was just missing certain parts of plot elements that had been revealed that I didn't understand. So and the whole teen drama thing I think could have been done without, but. I guess it was important to the plot.
I will be there at midnight watching the movie. Just saying. Anyway, in front of the Harry Potter movie coming out next week will be the Green Lantern trailer. Another reason for me to go see it. Amongst the highlights of the trailer are Arvin Sur crashing, a shot of Hal Jordan instantly changing into costume in front of his mate, Hal making a huge fist construct to right hook a bunch of bad guys, brief shots of Oa and Hector Hammond, and Hal going into hyperspace. Yay! I have full, wonderful expectations for this movie. Much like the two Iron Man films in the years past, Marvel's Thor is scheduled to open up a week earlier throughout the globe than in the U.S. According to the official site, with the exception of Japan, all major international territories like the U.K., Australia, France, and New Zealand are going to get Thor in cinemas April 28th or 29th. a full week ahead of when we get it on May 6th, which means I'll be downloading and watching it before I go see it in the theater. And then Captain America news, while J.J. Field will play the character of Union Jack in the upcoming Captain film, director Joe Johnson has officially denied the inclusion of the fellow Invader squad member Namor the Submariner, which I'm kind of happy for. And one last real quick bit. A site has confirmed that Sony's Spider-Man reboot will begin shooting in December. The Avengers will kick off filming in February in Los Angeles, and The Dark Knight begins shooting this April in New Orleans. So in February, I'll be hanging out in L.A. a lot, and then I'll be moving to New Orleans in April. Just FYI. And that's all the news bits I had. Brian, what else you got?
I think that's going to close out the rest of the news segment, so we'll take a quick break and come back with what we've been reading and watching.
Hi, I'm a chick, and I read comic books and play video games, and yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce. And I'm sorry.
All right, we're back. So we're going to take a little bit of time here and start talking about the films that we've been watching lately. So, AJ, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
I don't want to.
Do it.
I don't want to.
All right, moving on.
This week, I really didn't see any like big mainstream movies, but what I did watch was a DC Showcase film. And what it is at the beginning of each, any of those animated movies that we keep talking about on the show, such as Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, and all that, DC likes to put a little 20-minute showcase movie in front of it, highlighting certain characters within the DC universe. I managed to get a hold of a collection of these. And watch all of them last night, actually. Much in the way like Pixar likes to put in those little animated shorts before Toy Story or any of their movies. You know, DC does the same thing. So the four that they have done so far is Green Arrow, The Spectre, Jonah Hex, and Superman and Shazam. So I watched all those last night. And again, they're like 20, 30 minutes. You know, you're going to have to give me a second to research everything, and I'll continue talking in the meantime. The one I liked the most, I have to say, was probably the Superman Shazam one. Only because it was kind of an origin story about Shazam.
Right.
So it was kind of cool to see stuff like that. And I didn't mind it. But what the one I really hated was The Spectre. Now, admittedly, it could be because I haven't seen, or I'm not a real big Spectre fan, so, you know, watching this really did nothing for me. But at the same time, it just seemed too silly. I wasn't too excited about it. It seemed really campy and over the top and very noir, and it just, I don't know, I just didn't dig it. It had Gary Cole from Entourage as the role of the Spectre, and Alyssa Milano as one of the characters in there as well, and it was written by Steve Niles, which is pretty sad because I like Steve Niles as a writer, but I wasn't feeling the Spectre too much. The Jonah Hex one I liked a lot because it just showed him being Jonah Hex. You know, the voice casting was great too. It was Thomas Jane, Linda Hamilton, Michelle Trachtenberg, Michael Roker, and they all did a great job with it. And the animation style was phenomenal, and I dug it. The Green Arrow one, I kind of dug it too. I mean, it was kind of weird. And you'd think I'd be sick of Green Arrow, considering I do watch Smallville. I can't believe I just admitted that to people. But
you've talked about it before, so I think everyone knows.
Yeah, but they did a good job with the casting. Neil McDonough, who is one of my favorite characters from Band of Brothers, as well as Malcolm McDowell as the enemy. So it was pretty cool. So the Superman Shazam one I think was my favorite one. It was Return of Black Adam, who's one of my favorite characters in the DC universe, just because he's just a dick. You know, he's just a violent dick. I mean, he ran a country in Africa after killing a whole bunch of people in the comic book series, so I really dug it. And Jerry O'Connell was the voice of Captain Marvel. George Newberg was Superman, Arnold Vosloo as Black Adam, and James Garner as the Wizard. So it wasn't too bad. I dug it a lot. And again, these are like 15, 20-minute episodes. They're nothing too spectacular. They're just designed to introduce these characters in hopes of possibly seeing future full-length feature films with them.
Right.
Like Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, and so on. So in that aspect, I think they did a great job. I'm hoping I never have to see a Spectre movie because I just didn't dig it. But again, it could be because I'm not an actor or read much about the Spectre. So I'm not too big of I could care less about that one. But any of the other ones are pretty good. I'd like to see the Jonah Hex one because the movie was shite. The Green Arrow one I wouldn't be too excited about. But anything Superman, Batman, or Shazam right now is mainstream and pretty cool, so we'll see what happens. Real quick, something I just caught my eye while looking around. A new Serenity comic book is coming out, The Mysteries of Shepherd Book. So I'm very excited to see that, since Serenity is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, well, I've seen most of the episodes of Firefly, but There's a few episodes towards the end that I still haven't seen.
You need to see it. Firefly is one of the greatest TV shows that ever got canceled. You ever notice that one of the ones that we really like because it's more in depth than what we're normally used to watching are the ones that get canceled right away?
Yeah.
That's sad.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. It's because they want mind numbingness stuff going on. But all right. Anyway, that's all the reviews I have for films. Brian, what did you watch?
I finally went and saw Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It just came out. And it was kind of a lukewarm reaction to it. I mean, the special effects were really cool, and the fight scenes and everything were pretty entertaining. You know, it was the way that it was done. You know, kind of like that sort of comic booky / video game kind of thing that they had going on there.
Right.
Those parts are really, visually they were really stunning and, you know, entertaining, but the movie as a whole, I didn't really care for it. I didn't like any of the characters. I've been liking Michael Cera less and less since Arrested Development.
He plays the same character.
Yeah, it's another one of those, you know, one character actors, and it just okay. I guess he worked as that role for, you know, little nerd or something. I don't know, but just none of the characters in the film are really that likable. I think, you know, Kieran Culkin's character was kind of entertaining. In a stereotypical gay character kind of way.
He was a comedic relief. That's all he was in that.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the only character that I actually kind of felt anything for was Knives. And I just felt bad for her because she got screwed over the whole movie.
Right.
But, you know, Scott Pilgrim and Ramona Flowers are just, to me, they were entirely unlikable characters. I just couldn't really get into the film.
See, again, this is one of those movies where I walked in. You know what? No, I can't say that. The movie was shit. The movie was absolute shit. But I thought that the fight sequences and all the action and all the stuff that went on and the silly campiness, I was able to appreciate it, and it made me dig the movie. As far as like storylines and acting and all that stuff's concerned, it's fucking retarded. But because of the fight scenes and the special effects and all that stuff, it won me over, and I really dig the movie. But only on that aspect. But, you know, again, that's where we differ. And what I liked about the movie was not strong enough for you to enjoy the movie. So
yeah, pretty much. I mean, it probably would have been better if I had just watched just like a string of the fight sequences on YouTube or something. I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Right.
But as a movie,
But
I'm glad I didn't go spend, you know, the $49 to go see it in a damn movie theater.
Are tickets really that much now? $49? Woo!
I don't know. It feels like it every time I go. I don't even like looking at movie theaters anymore. They're so expensive.
It's getting retarded, just how badly it's getting.
So yeah, yeah. I give Scott Pilgrim a no.
A no. Scott Pilgrim, you are denied.
All right, well, do you have any other films or anything that you've watched? Or?
Nah, that's pretty much it.
All right, I guess we'll take a quick break and be right back.
Cool.
Hey, this is John from the High Tower Comics. I want everybody to go check us out at www.hightowercomics.com, where you will get the height of independent comics.
And welcome back to Panelcast, everybody. So in this segment, we're going to talk about the comic books that we've been reading and, something else. We're going to start this segment off with episode 2 of The Walking Dead. Brian, have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Ha ha, Brian, ha ha.
Yeah.
You fail at the game of geekdom.
I did. It completely slipped my mind that it was going to be on. So, yeah, I lose some nerd cred there.
And uncomfortable silence. And go. All right, that's too bad. The second episode of The Walking Dead premiered on AMC this past Sunday. I had a chance to sit down and watch it multiple times. And, you know, Brian, I hate to say this, but after watching the first episode, the first episode set such a high milestone that I think the second episode came up short. Not that it wasn't good or anything, but there were a lot of unnecessary racial slurs and slow pacing going on in it. I still thought it was great. I think it's a great show. Still going to be a huge fan and looking forward to the third episode. But at the same time, I think it just didn't have that impact that the first episode had. And, you know, maybe it's because, you know, the first episode was the first episode, you know?
Right.
The first episode was the anchor that led everybody else in, that led everything else in. And I can understand that, and I respect that. And I'm hoping that it maintains its pace from here on out. But if the second episode is any indication of the pace that it's going to set, then that's fine. But for me, seeing the first episode, I was expecting that pace from then on, and it changed pace because of it. So that is where I kind of have the problem in the second episode of Walking Dead. Again, it's still a good show, and I still thoroughly enjoyed it. The violence and everything was phenomenal. The story, the acting, characters, everything was good. But again, the unnecessary racial slurs kind of bothered me, and as well as the pacing. You know, it's kind of slowed down a bit, and
right.
You know, so. But we'll see. We'll see from there.
Did it feel like they were just trying to spend most of their time like setting up for the next episode?
It felt like they blew their wad on episode 1, and now episode 2 is a slow stroke to try and get back up there.
Hmm.
That's what it felt like, you know. But again, it wasn't bad. It's just in comparison to episode 1, it wasn't as good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So. But we'll see. We'll see. I want to see what everybody else has to say about it and what they thought about it. Especially you, Mr. Mark White, the one guy that responded to us. We appreciate this. I was wrong in that I had forgotten that you can't shoot a 1-ounce slug out of a shotgun as opposed to buckshot. So I stand corrected on that, and thank you for the correction. But, yeah. Anyway, going back, we'll see how episode 3 pans out. I'm interested. And since, Brian, you watched nothing and failed the Game of Life, we'll move on to our comic book reviews.
Okay.
What have you read today, this week, Brian?
Well, actually, I've only read one issue. I've been focusing more a lot on the stupid National Novel Writing Month thing. But got a review copy for Mythoi number 3. So I sat down to read that one, and then realized, as I got about 4 pages into it, that I don't think I had read Mythoi number 2. So there were some holes in the plot that I didn't have. So there are certain things that I wasn't able to follow. But overall, I mean, I still enjoyed it.
But that wasn't the fault of the comic book itself.
No,
just because you hadn't read the
song. That was just me, because there were certain things that I should have known about that I didn't.
Right.
But basically, if anybody who's, you know, listened to the previous podcast, I did a review for Mythoid Birth and read through the entire trade that they had for that and really enjoyed it. And Mythoid is essentially, it's like a modern fantasy story that involves five characters that are sort of like, their own personal adaptations of different mythological characters. And essentially it shows them like how they're trying to work together to defend humanity from this sort of evil presence. And the comic itself isn't far enough along to really, you know, get a good feel for, you know, exactly what kind of struggle they're going through. But a lot of things are getting set up right now. And I mean, they've already started hitting in some pretty heavy storylines. I don't want to give away, you know, the details of Mythoid number 3, but, you know, some pretty much right off the bat, some pretty heavy stuff happens in the storyline. Like, you know, I would say, you know, something that affects nations happens. So the pacing on it, you know, went along really nicely. I was able to follow the story pretty well, even though I was missing a previous chunk, which I'm going to have to go back and read. And, you know, the characters are really starting to take shape. I mean, if you've read the Mythoid Birth series, you already have a pretty good idea of each of the five characters. It's the entire trade kind of, you know, there's like a story arc for each one. So it definitely is it's shaping up. It's still right now, I'd say, probably the only fantasy comic that's out that I actually like. I'm not counting, like, you know, superhero fantasy, because the superheroes are kind of fantasy too, but this one is dealing specifically with mythological characters just in a modern setting. And I tried giving D&D another go and just couldn't.
Wow. Couldn't. You fell out of being a D&D fan. That's sad.
No, I still love the game. I just don't like the comic
at
all.
It's still sad.
But Mythoid doesn't suffer from the same problems that the D&D comic does, where the characters just, they're not developing into actual characters. You know, I mean, the people in Mythoid, Wiglaf, Vito, Yuki, Taros, and Touch, like, they're all starting to develop distinct personalities. And the personalities that they have now in, like, the modern period versus who they were in each of their, like, origin stories from the Mythoid Birth trade is kind of interesting too, because you see elements of who they were before meshing in with the characters that they are now, and it still works. Like, there's still something familiar about them, even though, you know, they may be walking around in a suit, you know, with a briefcase or something.
It sounds almost like I can't remember that one book by the Luna Brothers that we talked about, with the chick and the sword.
Oh, yeah.
The sword. Yeah,
it definitely has that kind of feel to it. Yeah, it definitely has sort of like a sword kind of feel to it, in terms of like just how the pacing of this story. Like, it's issue 3 and already some pretty major shit has happened. So I'm hoping that that's going to kind of continue on. And actually, the artwork in Mythoid kind of reminds me of the Luna Brothers artwork a little bit. I forget who the artist is. I'm always terrible with remembering names, but yeah. But yeah, definitely both the writing and the storylines kind of definitely remind me of a Luna Brothers type story. So I'm excited to keep reading. And I always like when somebody does something different with a fantasy series instead of just, you know, like the, like I said with the D&D comic, they're just trying too hard to make it a D&D comic to the point where they're not making it its own thing. They're, you know, they're just slapping the name D&D on there and not making the changes that are necessary to make it work. Right. Happens with comics as well, right, as movies. So, yeah, go out there, read Mythway number 3 from Semantink. Go to semantink.com and you can order it digitally. Yep,
they're
and
only 99
right
cents. Yeah. Well, yeah. What I've been reading, I started reading, I've suddenly turned into Boom Studios bitch. Where you're Red Five's bitch, I'm Boom Studios bitch. I started reading Incorruptible, which is a series put out by Mark Waid and Boom Studios. Duh. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with a lot of Boom Studios' work or Mark Waid's work, Incorruptible is kind of a compendium comic book series that runs parallel to the events that happen in Mark Waid's other book called Irredeemable. Irredeemable being, which I've reviewed on the show before, being a comic book series based on this Superman-level supervillain who was formerly the world's greatest superhero. Known as the Plutonian. And what happens in this book is, you know, just like I said, the Plutonian decides one day, he's like, you know what, fuck it, and decides to turn into a bad guy and just eradicates everything in its path. So imagine Superman getting pissed, and but globally, on a global level. It's an awesome book, dude. Seriously, you should pick it up. Irredeemable is, it's a great book. You should read it, honestly, seriously. Like, I don't, yeah. I can't put it into words how awesome this book is. But the parallel series called Incorruptible, which takes place in the same universe, is kind of following the same type of plot line, in where the world's greatest villain, known as Max Damage, who was the Plutonian's arch nemesis, they are the only two people in the world that can go at it toe-to-toe with each other without, you know, killing each other.
Right.
He sees what happens to the Plutonian. And there's this one moment in the comic series where he's in this town. The Plutonian decides to show up and everybody's all happy. Like, oh, Plutonian. Ah. And Plutonian's like, okay. And unleashes his heat vision and kills over like 20 million people. And Jesus. Instead of, you know, not knowing what to do, Max Damage just sits there in complete and utter shock, watching this happen, and he's like, how does this guy, you know, the one guy in the world that could save us, even if I take us to the brink of destruction, this guy here will be the one to bring humanity back to where it's supposed to be. How can he suddenly turn? And how can he suddenly be the one, if he's bad, then the world has no hope. So what Max Damage right. does is he decides to turn as well and become a superhero. And in that aspect, like, it's, yeah, from then on, that's where the comic series goes and takes off running, and it's an awesome, awesome comic series. Incorruptible is as well as Irredeemable. And the one thing that I find hugely funny is, like, you know, he turns into this good guy, but it doesn't happen. He disappears for a month, contemplates life, and comes back and decides to be a good guy. Unfortunately, his crew, the cities, and everybody else still think of him as a bad guy, so they still treat him as such. His crew is caught in the middle of, you know, a heist, and he shows up, and they're like, hey, okay, well, we got your half, da-da, and he, like, beats the shit out of all of them, takes the police chief down to his secret headquarters, burns all his money, burns all this stuff, and he's like, well, I can't touch it, I can't use it, because it was obtained illegally. You know, and does everything he can to redeem right. himself. In the eyes of everybody else, while at the same time becoming the anti-Plutonian superhero. So it's really, really cool. I really dig it. Like, I spent all day. It's only on issue 11 right now, and yesterday I read through all of them, all the way up to issue 11. He has a counterpart, a sidekick in the name of Jailbait, who is only 16 years old, and he stops having sex with her because she's underage and it's illegal. That's how reformed he's trying to get, you know. So, yeah, I can go on about it, but if I do, I'll give away too much. So let me just say, if you haven't read either one of these series, Irredeemable or Incorruptible, both put out by Mark Waid, then you should. Boom Studios is doing a great job backing this guy up and letting him run with these two series, and he's doing an amazing job on both of them. I actually met him at Free Comic Book Day last year and talked to him in depth. You can hear the interview I did with him on the Panelcast previously. Real cool guy, and this series is a reflection of him, and I really appreciate or really, really dig it. So, again, pick it up. And that's all the reviews I have for this time. Brian?
All right, why don't we go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
And we're back. This will be the final segment of the panel cast. I'm sure a lot of you people are probably bored off your ass by now, and I'm sorry. It's all Brian's fault.
Hey, you guys know we're long-winded, so I make no apologies.
Okay, moving right along. So I wanted to talk about a couple of video games that I've been playing recently. This past 2 weeks, I've seen the release of two major releases. First off being Star Wars The Force Unleashed Part 2, something I briefly touched upon in our last episode or the episode before that. I don't quite remember, but I've had more chance to play into the game and can give it a decent review for now. And that being that it is what I thought would be a very exciting and amazing game has turned into a boring piece of shit, which is sad. In an effort to improve upon their last release, the first video game that they came out with, Star Wars Force Unleashed, they tried to make it longer because that original game was maybe 10 hours long, if that. So they tried to make this game a little bit longer and have more powers and stuff and so forth. And honestly, after about an hour of this game, you're really bored of it because it's just a button-mashing game at that point. And it becomes really monotonous and tiresome and boring, which is sad because, you know, the powers you get are great. The Force Lightning, the Force Grip. I mean, I'm throwing TIE Fighters around like they're fucking candy. but at the same time, it's like, you're like, oh, okay, really? Again? Oh, again?
But then when you have unlimited power, it kind of
wears
out quickly.
Yeah, I mean, and yes, you can boost up the powers as, you know, with each points, the more points that you get and so forth, but I'm really not that excited about the game. And it's sad because, you know, you'd think I would be. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I was a huge fan of the first game, and this game is just, it seems drawn out. So, yeah. And the problem that they have with it is that they came out a week before Call of Duty Black Ops, which is a major release. People that are tons of fans of the Call of Duty franchise, me included. I've been playing Modern Warfare 2 for the past year nonstop, almost every day, just on the multiplayer alone.
Right.
So I started playing the Black Ops game, and it's an awesome game. I mean, it's Modern Warfare 2 with more improvements. The problem I do have with this game, and what I'm having with a lot of games that are coming out nowadays, is that they all seem to be aimed at high-definition TVs, which is cool, and if you have a high-definition TV, that's phenomenal for you, because the graphics are amazing, and the gameplay is great. Unfortunately, I do not have a high-definition TV, which makes it the text and the lettering blurry. I can't read anything that's going on. I don't know what I'm supposed to fucking do at this point. You know, I'm playing along, I'm having fun shooting and killing and everything, but I can't make out anything at all. Everything's very blurry and crappy for me.
And yeah, you would think they would at least include an option for low-res TVs. But
yeah, you think they would, but unfortunately they're not. So it makes someone like me who can't afford a high-definition TV, I mean, we're talking like $400 or $500 for like a cheap model, you know, and I spent that much just on the system itself. So I really can't afford to get a high-definition TV. So for that reason, this gameplay is lost on me, much like Battlefield Bad Company 2, which was designed for high-definition TVs as well. I it seems like a great and fun game. I just couldn't get behind it because I don't know what I'm doing because I can't read the text. You know, I can't upgrade my character properly. I can't upgrade my weapons properly. I don't know what's going on half the time. And I'm just stumbling through it, shooting and killing people, hoping I'm doing the right thing. So because of that, I have to say that I don't like the game. If I had a high-definition TV, my opinion of it would probably completely change. So it's unfortunate that people like myself have to deal with this. You know, and kids, I can only imagine what kids have to deal with, because I'm sure some parents that aren't into watching their kids gaming, you know, have to give their kids lower-res TVs or whatever, or having a hand-me-down TV that they're playing on, mm-hmm. you know, and so they're unable to enjoy this as well. Not that I think a kid should be playing these types of games, but, I mean, come on, let's admit it. A lot of kids are, because most parents don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it being on a high-definition standard, I'm unable to enjoy it as much as I should be. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that that happens. So, yeah, two games that get a blah for me. Force Unleashed 2, because it's just boring. And Call of Duty Black Ops. Again, it looks like a badass game, and I really want to enjoy it, but I can't because of the high-definition factor. It has a zombie level, which you can play, a zombie gameplay level, which you can play either co-op or by yourself, which is cool in itself. It seems to have more character customizations as opposed to waiting for individual upgrades in order to, for that weapon and attachment or what have you to be released. You're able to purchase it based on the points that you earn. So you can automatically jump to like the grenade launcher or, you know, laser sighting or what have you immediately, depending on how much points and money you want to spend on those purchases. So it's very intuitive and inventive in that aspect, but because of a high-definition factor, I'm unable to enjoy it completely as I wish I could. So, there you have it. Brian, you play anything recently?
No, not really. Playing some of my old video games. Mostly I've just going through and replaying stuff on the PlayStation 2 ever since I finally got over being upset that my PS2 game saves are all erased.
So, that's what I like about the PlayStation 3 is everything saved on the internal hard drive itself. So, you know, you never have to really worry about that.
Yeah. So I haven't played any new games in a long time. I haven't had the money for it, so I just don't really buy games.
Gaming is an expensive habit to have. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you got to buy a system which runs anywhere from $200 to $300. You got to have a high-definition TV now, which runs anywhere from $500 and up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the games themselves run $50 to $60 a pop. So, and then if you want to online gameplay, then you have to make sure you have a decent download and upload rate, you know. So it's pretty expensive to be a gamer nowadays. And
the price of the gaming has kind of caught up with me. So now, you know, every once in a while I'll ask for a video game for Christmas or something, but I haven't had the funds to really stay up with it.
Now, is the Wii, can you get online, play online for free on the Wii?
Sort of. With the Wii, the way it's set up is the internet access is free on it, but playing online, it really depends on the game. Like, it's not like it is with Xbox Live or whatever the PlayStation equivalent is for it.
PSN.
Yeah, where, they were trying to kind of ameliorate the issue of cyberbullying and stuff like that online. I don't know exactly, but they set up a thing with like friend codes, and so it's really kind of a complex process to actually play. Some of the games that are out don't use that. Some of them are a little bit easier to play online with, but the Wii, they didn't really go so much for like they didn't really kind of shoot for online gaming with it. Like it was just it's something that they have on there, but they mostly did it for like, you know, large groups of people at home. Like, they did it, said it, it seems like they
like party games.
Yeah, like party games, basically. Those are usually the most popular ones on there, the multiplayer games. And then, you know, of course, they've got their flagship franchises anyway, but it seems like that was mostly what it was designed for, is families and, like, party games.
And I know the Xbox Live, they do have a free online gaming, but if you want more access, then you have to pay for it.
Right.
Whereas the PlayStation Network is completely free, and you can game with anybody free online anytime you want, which is one of the things I really enjoy about it, you know? Because if I had to pay for online access, it would have cut my gaming a long time ago, which is one of the reasons why I haven't gotten Xbox yet, in that I don't want to pay a monthly thing to play online. It's kind of like World of Warcraft. Like,
right.
I find it, for me personally, I think it's retarded to buy a game, spend the money on buying a game, and then pay monthly just so you can play it.
Yeah, and it's a sad trend I've been noticing in games. That's another reason why I haven't been playing a lot of video games lately, is because I'm starting to see, especially in the PC era, where they're pretty much making it mandatory that you have to have an internet connection in order to play. Like, you know, they're putting so many restrictions on, well, you have to pay a monthly fee and you have to have an internet connection. So it's like, I can't just play the game and sit and enjoy it by myself. I have to do it their way, and it's I'm really kind of just getting sick of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I'll just, you know, thanks, I'll go pop in, you know, the Ocarina of Time and play that for the 9 billionth time.
Great game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that aspect. I mean, that's why I like some of the games that I play, Resident Evil and Call of Duty and what have you. I like they come with the campaign player game. You know, campaign missions where I can just play a first person or one player game and go through it and enjoy it. I don't necessarily have to play online. Though having a multiplayer on there is great in that aspect too, because you can expand on it. Uncharted 2 is a phenomenal game. Hands down one of the best games I've ever played. But then it has a multiplayer aspect where you can play online and do, you know, like team deathmatch, capture the flag, the whole nine. So that just adds to it. That just makes it a better game on top of that. But if I didn't have online access, then I'd be satisfied with that game by itself, you know. And I think that's where a lot of complaints come from with people, where they have these short games, like Force Unleashed 2. I mean, the first one was 10 hours. There was no multiplayer aspect to it or whatever. And you just basically wasted $50.
Right. Know?
So having that multiplayer aspect to it adds to it so that you can further enjoy the game. Like, you know, with Modern Warfare 2, I've been playing for over a year online gaming, like, nonstop. And if it wasn't because of that, I'd have been done with this game a long time ago and would have felt like I wasted that kind of money. Which is where companies like Gamefly, you know, come into effect, where you can just rent the game, play it, and then return it and not have to worry about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's sad when you get those games where you can't do anything but play online. If you don't have an internet connection or the money to pay the monthly bills, you're asked out of that game. What could be potentially an amazing game and an amazing experience for you and your friends? You know, unless you do LAN parties and stuff. But even then, a LAN party is fairly, you know, I mean, there's a lot to do with it. You'd have to, everyone brings over their computers at a big enough house where you can sit down and play a game all night.
Right. You know?
So, or you go to these LAN gaming centers where you just play anonymously, but at the same time you're not able to build characters or get really into the game too much, you know, or have a personalization into the game. So, I don't know. Gaming industry, you guys are raping us, and I'm not happy about it.
I'm sure they'll blame pirates or something.
Probably.
Some bullshit, but it's another just problem a I'm having bit to get more money.
That's another problem I'm having, is that the Xbox people, Xbox players and owners, Call of Duty Black Ops was available to download 3 weeks ago. So these people were downloading it, burning it to disk, and then playing it on modded systems way before we have been. So in cases like that, I mean, as far as normie people, and, you know, I'm a hacker. I'm a geek as well, but I don't like to do that with games. But for people like myself who got the game on its release date, to go in and play an online game and to see on the day it's released, people that are already jacked up to like 10 levels or have their 7th prestige or whatever, you know, on the day that the game came out, it's not fair. You know, it's an unfair advantage for us to have to deal with, but yeah. So screw you, Xbox people. Another reason I don't like you. And scene. So yeah, there goes my video game reviews. Before we walk out of here and close up the show, we want to remind everybody about two comic book conventions that are coming up this weekend. The first one being the Rose Bowl Comics and Collectors Show. The second will be the Baker's Comic Con, comic book convention, Bakersfield. Justin will be over at the Bakersfield one, selling all the ZKS gear as well as the Necrosapien Press stuff. I will be at the Rose Bowl Comics and Collectors Show selling ZKS stuff as well as being a host for Cobra 3rd Night Watch, a cosplaying unit that will be out there promoting and trying to recruit people into their unit. So come out either one to see us both at either locations, both happening on Sunday, the 14th. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be the only chance to pick up the ZKS Spotlight Kayla issue that we put out from 24-Hour Comic Book Day last year. Brian, you're sorely missed at these conventions. I say that every time we do a show.
I know, and I wish I was there. It would be nice. I mean, especially, you know, the Rose Bowl show has been kind of a staple for Forbidden Panel.
Yeah, that's our home.
And so...
That's our home away from home. We had a lot of fun there. It's an awesome event. It takes place during the swap meet. So, you know, people can walk around, do their shopping, while us geeks meet up together at the basement and talk comic books. So.
Well, hopefully, eventually, we'll be able to start getting a presence for conventions going on around here. Trying to get some more details for the Boston Comic Con. Not really finding any information on how to sign up for that one. So, I don't know. My biggest problem has just been lack of funds lately. Just don't have the money to go to any of these things.
Which brings me to the next point that I wanted to discuss on the show. As many of you can see on the Forbidden Panel site itself, we have a Donate Now button. We're asking for any types of donation. We need your help in helping us print our next issues of comic books and so forth. Anybody that donates will get a free copy of the comic book and a sticker. So please click on that Donate Now button and donate to your heart's content because we really appreciate it. It's just so that we can get the next issue out. We're not actually asking for money so that we can survive on or buy a plasma TV so I can play Call of Duty or anything that. We're asking for help.
All the money is going towards Forbidden Panel and Forbidden Panel related.
Right, like printing the comic books, getting us to the conventions and so forth. And on that note, we want to announce that we will be having a booth at WonderCon. So, for those of you in the San Francisco area, come out and see us at WonderCon April 1st to the 3rd. It's an amazing event, one of my favorites, like seriously, hands down, the best comic show that I've ever gone to. So, please come on out there and support us and see us.
Yeah, I'm gonna do my best to try to start a savings account or something to have enough money to get out there for it.
That would be awesome. Because we miss you, Brian. We miss our Brian.
Get the whole crew together.
Word. So on that note, Brian, did you have anything to say before we exited?
Just the same as always. I want to thank everybody for listening and, you know, thank everybody for coming to the site, reading our stories, listening to my ranting, and, you know, just being our fans in general. We wouldn't have the motivation or even, you know, the purpose to do any of this stuff without you. I mean, if we had released our first comic and nobody cared, Forbidden Panel probably wouldn't be here. So it's our fans really that are keeping us going.
Exactly. And this show being 70 episodes in, that's a lot of episodes, people. And we're really appreciative that you guys tune in and listen to us every week. You know, that's a big commitment in itself, and we really
appreciate one's told
it.
Us to shut the hell up, so.
Yeah, and we haven't lost any fans or anything. In fact, we seem to be gaining fans as the further along we go. And 70 episodes, that's a long time. Dude, we've been doing this, what, 3 years now? 4 years?
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, we don't have a regular podcast update, so maybe that's part of the reason is, you know, we're not, you know, people don't have to listen to us every week or so. You know, sometimes we'll go a couple weeks without doing a podcast, give people a break from our long-windedness.
Right. But yeah, so thank you everybody for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed the new website. It's a little bit more user-friendly. The pop-up player is one of my favorite features. I've been messing with it all week, listening to our past shows on it, just because I can. Please let us know what you think about it and stuff.
Yeah, eventually we'll get everything all tied together so it's all nice and neat.
Right. But for now, we hope you enjoy it. The website, the Forbidden Panel website that you know right now, the forum site, will remain up, but you will slowly see sections of it disappearing as we move them on to different subsites. So don't be, you know, afraid when you show up and you see that we're the panel cast part is missing out of that site. It's still there. We'll have a banner up for you to go click on and take you to the subsite and so forth. So bookmark us and keep us in mind. We're just trying to clean things up and make it a little friendlier and give everybody their own respective space. Brian's Geek Girls will have its own subsite at some point. AJ's Side Panel will have its own subsite. Now, all of our reviewers and stuff will have their own individual subsites so that we can focus on them individually and keep you guys from getting lost with all the madness that happens on the forum site. Because we understand that it's getting really big and there's a lot of posts going on, and just to try and read everything on there would be maddening in itself. So, yeah, just stay tuned. We're trying to make it all easier for you guys and easier for us as well. If you have nothing else, Brian, I will say goodnight and we will see you guys next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.